It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Empire.
Hello and welcome to my podcast. Do me a favor, subscribe to the John Kime Report. Wherever you get your podcasts, you're watching on YouTube, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. You can find us there as part of Empire Media. That's A-M-P-I-R-E. Always much appreciated when you tune in. And don't forget, you can read my work on ESPN.com. Also, if you want to become a club member, go to the Empire Media YouTube page on your laptop, see the word join, click on that, and find the level of membership you're comfortable with. On Tuesday, I did a private Zoom session with the gold members, which then gets played for all the other members as well. So the gold members get that little 40-minute private session, and it's always fun. Very good questions. You can ask what you want, and I try to help out with whatever I can. Anyways, and if you don't want to do that, that's fine too. Still going to be here giving you all this other content. Anyway, today I'm joined by Kansas State tight ends coach Brian Lepak, who of course coached Ben Sinnott in college. Sinnott, of course, was one of three second round picks by the Commanders, the third of that group, 53rd overall, and is a guy that the Commanders are pretty excited about and what he can do. So I wanted to bring on Brian just to talk about his former player. They know him. He knows him very well and has some really good insight. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Kansas State tight ends coach Brian Lepak.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Trades, free agents, quarterbacks, and all kinds of adventures await the Commanders this offseason. Looking for an adventure of your own? The Adventure Park at Sandy Spring has you covered. The country's largest ropes course and zipline park, located in Montgomery County, Maryland, is now open. Named Best Amusement Park and Climbing Destination in the DMV 2 years in a row, the Adventure Park at Sandy Spring is perfect for birthdays, corporate outings, groups, and families. With challenges anywhere from beginner to expert, there is something for all skill levels. Anytime you're thinking about reaching new heights, make sure you know before you go. The Adventure Park at Sandy Spring is the only ACCT accredited park in Maryland or Virginia. Staying on the ground, give axe throwing a try. You can throw at traditional targets or play any number of interactive games. You can even upload your own image. So there you have it, folks. Climbing, ziplining, axes, food, and bonfires right in your backyard. Reserve your adventure today at www.theadventurepark.com/kime. That's www.theadventurepark.com/kime. Brian, first of all, thanks for joining me. And I always start off with a simple question. What is Washington getting in Ben Sinnott?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, you're getting a guy that is a real competitor. Ben never wanted to leave the field. He'd have to be absolutely gassed to take him off. Sometimes, you know, I would be up in the press box and our receivers coach would be on the sideline, Matt Middleton, and he would be controlling substitutions. And I would say, hey, get the next guy in. And Ben would tell him, no, I'm good. Like, you know, get him off the field. And they'd have a little bit of a back and forth. But you're getting a fierce competitor. I mean, you got a guy here that started off as a walk-on fullback that was a hockey player, and to come through and become the guy and play the way he did, it just tells you what kind of a competitor he is.
And obviously, you know, you were not there yet when he walked on, correct?
No, I was not.
So you got, but you've seen his progress over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Obviously you coached him. So how did he go from walk-on to now where he is at in the NFL?
Well, the first thing is there was an immense physical development that happened during the time that I wasn't there. I know he showed up as like a 205 or 210 pound guy. And by the time I got there a year after he would have been on campus, he was already in the 240s. Now some of that was good weight that he gained. Some of it was bad weight. And he continued to hone his body. But in the 21 season, he was already physically big enough to play at this level. And was already starting to assume a role. He was a naturally gifted kid that had really, really good ball skills that you can't necessarily teach and good athletic instinct. But he had some rawness to him about, did he really know the game and understand it? And he had a limited role at first that kind of started as a fullback that then grew to like, hey, you know what? We can put him in all these different spots. And he has versatility to help us. And so development wise, it then became a lot more of understanding and learning fundamentals of the game, understanding principles of the game so that he wasn't out there just a robot following assignments, but he was someone that could actually look at and understand, okay, this is the coverage structure, or, hey, I'm on this side of the formation. And if the corner's in this alignment, I know it's zone coverage. If the safety's down, now I know it's man coverage. So he got over time that those were the big development pieces that happened, as well as continuing to form his body and be a guy that, you know, really from an athletic profile, did a huge transformation of great lean body mass and explosive ability and all that.
What, as a player, how would you, because he kind of was all over the place for you guys. So how would, yes. Like, what are his strengths as a player in your eyes?
Well, he's really smart, first of all. I mean, to be able to put him in all those different places, right, exactly. Really good student. And he could comprehend a lot of assignments. And what we ask him to do in the offense that we run is not simple. Those tight ends really adjust a whole lot and have to know formationally every single adjustment. And then they usually are the ones that get, well, here's the base rule for the assignments in the run game, but exception.
Right.
And a lot of the exceptions end up falling on the tight ends. It's usually pretty well packaged in most systems that the O-line is going to have a steady set of assignments. Receivers are going to have a steady set of assignments. The running backs are going to have a steady set of assignments. The quarterback's got to know it all. And the tight ends usually have to adjust to, yeah, but if you get this look, you got to do a little bit different. If you get this look, you got to do a little bit different. And so there was a lot of intelligence there to be able to figure that out. And then the fun part was he was a physical player,
yeah,
first and foremost. And being a physical guy allowed it to where you didn't have to package him just to be on the field in certain situations. So it wasn't a guy that was just going to come out on third down or an obvious pass situation where everybody could point, hey, 34 is on the field, they're going to throw the ball.
Right.
He was on every down. And because of that, that gave us the versatility to really utilize his skill set in the passing game, because you never know when those opportunities are going to come. And he went a substantial portion of the 22 season without a lot of opportunities until probably the last quarter, and then he really took off because the opportunities presented himself. He made big plays, and then it just kind of continued to compound upon itself.
And it's sticking with like the versatility, because you see him as an offset, like basically a fullback, right?
Yeah.
And you know, in line, you see him in the slot, you see him as a receiver, as in that fullback role. Because one of the things that Anna Peters talked about was he kind of reminds him a little bit of like a Kyle Juszczyk, and he brought up Kittle too, just for some of the physicality part. How did you, I don't know how familiar you are with Juszczyk, but do you see any of those kind of similarities, even just from that fullback role and being able to play both?
Yeah, I mean, we use Ben and obviously out of the backfield, and understanding the fits from that position aren't easy. A lot of times if you're on the edge and you're a tight end, you're controlling D gaps, you're in combinations cutting off the backside, you may be blocking down on the front side of a gap scheme or on a pin and pull scheme. And so your assignments are a lot more one-off when you're in line or in conjunction with someone. When you're the fullback position, you're pulling on counters, you're leading on ISOs, you're kicking on power. The fits of the entire offensive line become a lot more relevant. So you're the sixth piece out of six with the 5-0 linemen, sometimes the seventh with the tight end. When you're the tight end, you're really a part of a combination. So your vision's smaller. So very similar, like Juszczyk is a, you know, he played there from that spot where he can understand all those fits and what the route tree is from there. A couple of times we'd use him in protection to be like six-man protection, get it back out on a free release and let him, you know, check, protect, and swing to the flats. And so in that regard, he's similar, but he's a bigger guy than Juszczyk. He's a 6'4 guy, you know.
Yeah.
And in the terms of a ball carry, he didn't do it a lot since I've been here. Right. I think he had two carries like the first year I was here. He scored a touchdown against Kansas and took some fullback dive, but we stopped doing a lot of that stuff.
And it's funny because I saw just in watching some of your games, like you'd see them, I mean, you guys had that red zone package with, I think it was, I can't remember who it was, but number five, I think would come in and you would see him kick out some of the ends and then, and take them around the end. I can't remember which game it was. I scored a touchdown on that too.
Tech.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Texas Tech. Yeah. And you know, like, is that some of the stuff that you're talking about that,
that as well. Yeah. I mean, the ability for him to go, what we call like a bypass scheme where we can read influence ends and the quarterback be able to keep the ball on the zone read concept or at the same time, just go kick out the end. It's really kind of that similarity that you're talking about, Juicich. And then where probably some of the similarities Kittle come in is that he's a bigger body and you can put him up at the line of scrimmage and run wide zone concepts and utilize his athleticism there in the run game.
You also hear a lot and you'd see a lot running after the catch.
Yep.
Why is he effective there, do you think?
He's a big body. He's powerful. I mean, I think you can see from his testing numbers, he's real explosive. And so you're talking about he's a 250-pound guy. He carries a lot of his weight in his lower body. And you get that guy with a little bit of space and get his shoulders square and facing downhill. That's hard for a secondary player, a defensive back, to be able to actually get him on the ground and tackle him. And so they're trying to make side profile tackles. This is a guy that has the power to run through that. But then, you know, there's a couple instances where in his career where he showed he had the ability to elevate and go over someone trying to take out his legs. And so he had one big highlight against Texas in 22 where he got up and over. And I think when you're a defensive player and you can see that a big person like that, that can do that, you know, it limits how you can go approach them on a tackle because you can't just commit to, I'm going to dive and take out his legs. Because if we can pick up his feet a little bit and get over you or get him out of the way, well, now I got to take him on high, and that's where he can use his power to the 40-inch vertical, the 10-6 broad jump. That's where he can use those things to run through people.
How much do you see that hockey influence in him? I mean,
Well, one, I think you see, you know, I think the stat when he was coming out of high school was something like he either led the league in points and second in penalty minutes or the other way around. It was something like that, right? I think where you see that come through is in two different ways. One, you know, those guys are competitive. They fight. They like to fight. Yeah. And I think Ben, like I told you, is a competitor. You go beat out a bunch of guys like that, you've got some stuff to you. And then I think the second thing you see it out is he had natural feel for, you know, what we talk about is the same foot, same shoulder fundamental, the ability to put you in the strongest position in football and kick somebody out. And he had natural feel for that because of hockey and going and, you know, you hip check somebody the exact same position. And so he had natural feel of how to track that at high speed and get into the right position so he could land a better position on contact than a lot of guys could. And, you know, sometimes you can drill a lot of stuff, but if you've got playing experience in another sport, you know, basketball player that can drive to the hoop, I mean, that's a great D-end and pass rush. So when you have those kind of transferable skills, it always helps you out.
And I was going to ask you that too, about the ability to hit and get, you're knocking someone into the boards that had to have helped him and just develop maybe a love of physicality too.
That too. And like a love of physicality and then shoot. I mean, you know, I'm not a student of hockey, but I'm assuming, you know, you skate around at high speeds with a stick in your hand and you're trying to play with that little puck, you probably have pretty good hand-eye coordination. And so to be able to do those things, there's all kinds of ways that you can't count that those factor into. And I think, you know, for me on the college side, when you're recruiting a guy that plays a bunch of sports like that, is always a benefit because I can get you running around cones and doing all kinds of stuff. Right. But if you have a natural feel of how to get around somebody in space, well, that's a route.
You talk about the competitiveness. How else did you see that, whether it's in practice, whether it's before practice, how else did you see that manifest itself?
Well, one, he always took great care of his body, was always serious about doing his recovery and making sure his body was right to go play. So he spent a lot of time in extra recovery on his own, doing yoga, stuff like that. Spent extra time in the film room, trying to learn and grow as a player, and not, like I said, not just be a robot. You know, otherwise I saw he's held himself to a really high standard. So if he didn't perform at the level he wanted to, whether that was in practice or in a game, he was a pretty harsh critic of himself. And you'd see some of that fire kind of come out in practice, and never in a way that was about, you're not getting me an opportunity, more in the way of, maybe I missed a block that I thought I should make and then I'm pissed. And those kinds of things are where you could see some of that competitiveness come out, and was always ready for the fight and always with his teammates. And I think that he played with something to prove. You know, he came out of high school with not a whole lot, and we gave him the opportunity. I think he always went out there and said, this is my opportunity to prove everybody that passed on me wrong. And he played with that kind of edge.
So do you remember a time where he didn't execute a block right in the game and you saw it in practice and you're just like, oh, that's, do you remember a time like that?
Yeah. I mean, I think like a specific instance of a,
yeah, if you have, if you, play. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what, like, I mean, it would happen a decent amount where something maybe happened inside and you'd go back and run it back and then knock the shit out of somebody, so, you know, or, I mean, shoot, if he did make a bad play, you know, he'd come off the sideline and guys used to joke that he would know when I'd tell somebody, hey, tell him to come to the head, like come to the phone so I can talk to him. He'd know exactly what it was about. It's like, yeah, I know. And they get on there with me. He's like, hey coach. And he just would say immediately what it was. And I'm like, yep. And I was like, are you good? You guys like, yeah, I got it. I got to do this. And you get it correct. And then you go back and play, you know? So
that's pretty good. And then you were an offensive line guy.
Yep.
So how do you see like his, in terms of his blocking, and how did your background help him maybe develop as a blocker?
At first I adjusted to the position. I had to learn a little bit. They're different body types. And so some things you can teach an alignment that you can't really teach those guys because physically they can't get away from it. Some of the principles are all the same. Like you're going to, you know, strong positions are strong positions, right? But some things you can kind of get away with an alignment that you think is a fundamental that works. Well, it works because they're absorbing contact at 300 pounds. And if the 245, 250 pound guy doesn't work the same. But, right. You know, I think the biggest area of improvement that he made right off the bat was he got more efficient with his footwork. Mm-hmm. And then he started to truly understand scheme. And when you understand scheme and what the total picture is, it makes you a much more efficient player. And a lot of times I think those guys kind of get into, they have blinders about their single assignment. And if they can understand, hey, the whole entire run scheme, what we're trying to accomplish and where everybody's going, well, then they're better. Their angles, their reaction time's faster, their angles that they take are better. And I think that's probably what helped him a lot was expanding his vision of that, of like, oh, hey, this is, I'm a part of a, you know, 8-man moving picture here.
I'm like you said, I mean, I don't know that everybody feels like that. So what kind of improvement did you see in him when he got that?
Yeah, biggest improvement was right away. He played a lot faster. He didn't hesitate as much on, hey, there was an unsureness, I think, early on as to am I doing the right thing? And so he'd react slower to movements or stunts by defensive linemen. He'd take bad angles because he's saying, hey, this is the man I'm going to block, and he's over here instead of thinking about, well, where's the ball actually going to go? Do I need to meet him where he's going to be at? Stuff like that. Those are the biggest improvements that I saw right away, was just him understanding like, hey, I got to adjust. I'm not just running to that guy. I'm running to that guy to get leverage for a particular play.
Two more things. One, the Iowa State game, his last game was 10 catches. Mm-hmm. What do you recall about that game from him? What did he show that was anything different about that game, or just more opportunities?
There were more opportunities. We kind of got into a game that obviously didn't go well for us in the grand scheme of things, but you know, he's one of our more reliable players. And I know, you know, Colin was trying to get him the ball in ways that he got hot and get to keep him going, right? Bigger body, harder to tackle in a snow game like that.
Yeah, it would look like a fun, as a fan, to watch that kind of thing. But anyway, I don't know how it was.
Well, the conditions on the field were pretty bad. And yeah. So if you were a guy that was a little bit more of a speed player, like you could get physically rerouted and never get open. So if you were one of our outside receivers, you're going to have a hard time sticking your foot in the ground, be able to change direction, use your skill set. Well, your big body like Ben, that doesn't bug you as much. You know, he actually, it's his advantage, right? Right. And then I'd say the second thing was he played 94 snaps in a row before he had to come out of the game at the end with full body groups. And we snapped the ball, I think, like 106 times.
Wow. So
he was hurting there at the end, and he wanted to play. And I talked to him before the game. It was senior day. And I just said, listen, you tap your helmet when you want to come out. You know, I told you earlier at the times I tried to sub him out and wave it off, right? I said, you tap your helmet when you need to come out. And he never really tapped it. He finally got to where he could tell he wasn't running as well. And so when the sub came in, he came. And he was having cramps and wasn't moving near as fast as he was earlier in the game. I mean, you know, by halftime, I think he played like 55 snaps.
Wow.
So I would say, you know, the biggest thing that sticks out to me is the last game that he played for us. He left everything he had out there and played it all the way through. And I don't know very many guys that play 94 snaps in a row at tight end in college football. Especially when you get 10 targets like that, you're getting
right. Eight. Probably not very many. Last thing then, personality wise, how would you describe him as a personality guy off the field?
Yeah. A little bit of a goofball at times. Has a good sense of humor, smart, but overall good guy. I think he, because of it, when you've been a walk on, you have a little bit of a sense about you that, you don't let your highs get so high that you think you're better than everybody else. Does that make sense? And so, it's a great sense of humor, there's a humbleness about him. There's a confidence about him that he's going to be great, but it's not a confidence that comes over as arrogance to where he thinks he's better than everybody else.
Is he a practical joker type, or is he just funny?
A little bit with his buds. Yeah, he is. And then, in the meeting room, he could pick up on me on repetitive stuff of things that I'd say over and over again.
Anything funny that stands out?
Oh, just, if I say certain phrases over and over again, and so you can repeat it back to me early, or give me crap about, I played at Oklahoma. And so if I ever use anything as an analogy from that or from the time that I was graduate assistant there, it's like, they'd all give me crap about that. So,
well, Brian, I appreciate your time, man. Thanks for the insight on Ben.
All right, I appreciate it.
That's it for this episode. Thanks to Brian for joining me, and thank you, as always, for tuning in. I'll be back on Thursday morning with another episode. I'll talk to you next time.